at Lost River, we've had a weekend of studies on how to serve God in our homes and in our families. And the lesson you're about to hear was presented to the women of the congregation by Paula Walker.
Let me tell you how I do when I'm teaching a lesson. And my girls, sometimes we travel and do things together, and they do such a better job than I do at preparing and delivering lessons. Some of you know them, they're grown women. So when I say girls, don't picture, you know, little. Yeah?
Turn it off and take it off.
I'll try to remember to take it off. Anyway, we get where we're going, and I'm just not that confident, to be honest. I'm not great at saying, this is final. This is the final lesson. Oh, I love this lesson. This is it. I'm giving this lesson. And so I oftentimes go to my room, wherever we're staying, and the night before, I go, I rewrite the whole thing. And I did that last night, too. But let me tell you why I did. I mean, sort of rewrite, not the, I used things I had studied, of course. But let me tell you the setup for today, what I'm trying to accomplish today, and then what we'll do tomorrow. Because I'm not sure that was conveyed 100% the way I thought it was going to be conveyed. So what I'm trying to do today is we're going to go to Titus 2, and we're going to prime the pump for what older women are to be and what they are to teach. And I'm assuming, you know, this should be about a 45-minute class. And we're going to touch on all of those things together today. And then tomorrow morning, my lesson was entitled, and it still is entitled, Spiritual Mothering. And what I want to do then is I want us to work together. It will not be a lecture. It will be brainstorming. I do have some ideas, but I want us to solve this problem of this generational gap that we have that is sometimes frustrating. Now, I'm not saying that about Lost River. Nobody called me and said, talk about this, Paula, because we've got a gap here. But I know this from many churches that I know of, and the women at Henderson, the older women want to bond and work with the younger women, but they don't always know how to approach them, to be involved with them. And so we're going to share ideas about how that can be done effectively, because let's be real, that's what Titus is all about. Older women teach the younger women, and it's not just for me in this kind of setting to teach you. I mean, as a matter of fact, I know this is true. A lot of what I say today, you probably won't remember, because yesterday I was mentioning that my favorite ever lesson that I've written and taught, I gave here last year on 1,000 Days with Moses, and I won't elaborate on mothering this time around because we did last time around. I was trying to name the 3 points, and I couldn't remember the third one. So I figured, if I don't remember the third one, so then you probably don't either. So we're not always, you know, going to remember everything that we study, but we're going to pick out some highlights. And here's my goal. My goal is for us to think about what we ought to be, and then how that is our testimony to being God's people. Our witness in the world is who we are as women. And that was really the point in Timothy and Titus. And we'll probably run across that a couple of times. I've got a lot of scriptures I'm going to reference. But it says, so that the word of God will not be blasphemed. Be this, do this. Be this, do that. So that the word of God will not be blasphemed. So that people won't have a reason to criticize this faith. Because this faith was turning the world upside down. Why did I cry? It was new. It was different. And people were afraid of it. And it was easy to find ways to say, it's not working. It's not life-changing. See, that's not really working. Their homes are no different than our homes. Their women are no different than our women. Their families are no different. If they're not different, then what's the point of this new way of living and this new way of believing? I'm just going to hold on to this and point it at you. If I try to hook it to me, it's going to be awful. I don't know where it's going to go. Okay, so anyway, let's go to Titus, And the purpose of our lesson, as I said, is to talk about what we ought to be and then what we're supposed to teach. And I will not have time, I know, to go into the detail that I would like to on some of the topics. I really would want to save some things also for tomorrow when we talk about spiritual mothering. But the title of my lesson for today was intended to be, and still could be, called A Partnership with God, and mainly focusing that on mothering and motherhood. Because hand in hand with God is how we have to be as we mold the life of the children that we are raising. Now, when I thought, too, that not everybody here today would be in the child-rearing stage of life, I thought I would open that up and broaden that just a little bit. But so it is a partnership with God, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the lesson. I want us to think about this. Let's go ahead and read Titus 2, and then we'll get to some of the character traits. Let's think about that together. In Titus chapter 2, and I'm going to just, let's just start in verse 1. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men may be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience, that the older women likewise be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So all of these things contribute to our testimony to the outside world that we're living by the gospel and the word of God. So we're going to break that down just a little bit. Let me find my starting point, because I started over, as I said. So we are to be reverent in behavior. We are not to be slanderers, not given to much wine. And I'm going to kind of pull that into being sober. And we are to be teachers of good things. And so what we are to teach is to teach the young women to love their husbands, their children. That's a huge, could be a whole separate class. That could be a whole separate weekend. That's a huge topic. But we're going to talk about how to be discreet, chaste, and some of those other things at whatever stage of life you find yourself. Now, as I said, tomorrow we're going to deal with ways to teach. But I think the most obvious way of teaching the virtues that are mentioned in Titus 2 are to be an example of those things, obviously. Now, I was kind of afraid that when I said my lesson, which I said I think tomorrow was going to be Titus 2 more than today, but I switched it a little bit, that you would think the lesson for spiritual mothering would be just for the women who are older. And it's always been kind of a dilemma. We had a class about this at Henderson, just a brief class one day, and nobody really wants to admit to being that older woman. I know. So I read somewhere and it said 60. So 60-year-olds come to the front row. I'm kidding. But that's not really what this is about. I mean, this is really about spiritual maturity, experience, and wisdom, not about number of years. So I want you to think about this, because we say this a lot about men who achieve to be elders, and we read about what they are supposed to be. And we realize this, and we say this all of the time. They don't just wake up one day and say, I'm an elder. I've got all that. Surprise, I have all that. I'm all that. It's something that's been worked on and focused on, and their character has been built, and their godliness and their holiness has been a priority in their life, and they've focused on their family so that in such a way one day they could serve. I think that's the same thing for us as older women, or women as we're getting older. As a matter of fact, I was kind of pleased to notice that some of these very same things that we just read in Titus 2 are said about the deacons' wives in 1 Timothy 3:11. Deacons' wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things, and so on. And it says, you know, some say as becoming women of holiness. So I don't know how old your deacon's wives are. Now I've lowered the bar. The deacon's wives in our congregation are in their 30s, a lot. So let's just say that that everybody is older than someone. And while nobody wants to admit that they're the oldest person in the room, and I'm sure somebody's the youngest, and we're not even going to ask you that because we don't want to hear you brag about it. You might be a teenager. I don't know. But there's extreme value in being older and wiser and more experienced in life and having something to share. Because sometimes as people do get older in life, they start feeling like, am I useful anymore? That's kind of true in the work world. We know that. And it could be true in the Lord's kingdom, but it's not. It's, we need you. And I say this, the teenagers need the women in their 20s to bond with them. And the women in their 20s need the women in their 30s to help them. They've just been there and done that. Maybe, well, maybe a disaster. I mean, let's be real. I mean, who doesn't look back on their teenage years and say, I could have done better? And I would tell you a few things I could have done better, but we're being recorded. I'm going to strive for perfection since I've got teenage granddaughters. No, this won't be true confessions. But in a private and in the right setting and at the right time, because a relationship has been built, the women, young women in their 20s can relate to the teenager's struggles. And the women in their 30s can relate to the ones in their 20s, and so on. So we're going to look back, and we're going to think of ways tomorrow especially to pass on generational values and help each other. Because I've got to tell you somebody that helped me. And I don't know. I'm going to show you this book. And I thought, this is by Rachel Howard, In the Hands of Woman. And when I'm studying something specific, I usually have a book or buy a book, and I'll recommend it. I'm sure this is out of print. She was born in Adair County, Kentucky on January 22nd, 1910. She could be your grandmother. If she's related to you, raise your hand right now. So, because what if I say, I don't know what I'm going to say. No. A godly and holy woman. But you know what? I honestly thought, we're renovating right now, and so I had to pack up all my books in boxes, and they're in a bedroom. It's a huge mess. I had to dig through boxes, and this just kind of, I looked at it, and that is very old-fashioned. And, you know, I mean, that's a black and white. No, the color, the book is orange, but the picture. And, you know, I could easily have said, this is not for me. But this is, to me, an example of an older woman teaching a younger woman. See, there is somebody older than me who has left something behind for me to benefit from. And she speaks so wisely, and I've pulled some excerpts. I don't know if I'll directly quote her today or not, but she almost speaks the King James English. It's so perfect. And she has some great ideas, and they're not new, and they're not old. They're timeless. Principles of godly living for women. So I'm just going to say, you probably could not find that. I'm showing this to show you that there are many ways for older women to teach younger women. And this older woman has taught much to me. Let's talk about being sober and being sober-minded, not given to much wine. I wouldn't spend a lot of time on that with you because I'm assuming that we have conquered our addictions. And that could also, that's a whole different topic than I'd like to go with today anyway. But let's talk about, instead of being intoxicated or what is mentioned, given to much wine, let's talk about a woman who has her faculties about her and is sober-minded. First off, let's think about your mind. To be sober-minded, you are taking your role seriously. And let me say this. Rachel Howard, over and over in her book, talks about the exalted role of women. And, you know, that's kind of my goal in teaching younger women is, you know, the details, I hope, touch your heart. One little thing, maybe. But if my goal, besides not crying, is to get you to feel valuable, to feel important, to feel useful in the kingdom of God, to feel that way about your role as a wife and especially as a mother, that's the most important thing you could ever do? I don't know your jobs. It's just best that I don't know. You might be head of a corporation and the most important woman on the campus of wherever you work, but that doesn't compare with the importance of your role in your home. And so I love the fact that Rachel Howard has encouraged me in that, because there are long days with babies and little children that you feel like, really, I could do so much more than this. I'm sure that you thought that, because I remember thinking that. My memory is good enough to remember that. So, and I see it a little bit with my daughters sometimes needing a break. But taking your exalted role seriously, that it's a God-given role, is, I think, being sober-minded. Your mind needs to dwell on things that are good and purposefully. So, Philippians 4:8, we all know this. It's probably been a memory verse that you've said many times. Whatever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, and of good report, think on these things. So we want to fill our mind with good things if we're sober-minded. Another thing to consider in being sober-minded is your speech. In Matthew 12:34, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So kind of what's in here is probably going to come out one day, unless you never talk. But we need to cultivate a heart that is full of good things by putting good things in our mind. In Proverbs 31:26, we always have to go back to her and learn from the wisdom of that chapter. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. Our speech can make or break somebody's day. Haven't you done both? Have you done both? Okay, I've done it a lot. But I've got to tell you something kind of funny. And my children remember it, and they're grown. They do not forget some of the things. And not that long ago, Bonnie was working on something. And she loves singing. She's a songbird. And she, you know, that's her favorite thing, is to sing. And she's always kind of jokingly said, when the men all go off to war, I'm going to be a song leader. Because I would love to be a song leader. And somebody asked her, I know, liberated women, right? Somebody asked her to lead singing at maybe, when I say lectures, don't get carried away. Like, the FC Lectures has a spot for women, and sometimes they sing. So she did that thing one time. But here's what I said to her, because I think she has many other talents. And I said, Bonnie, I don't think that's going to be how you're going to be asked to serve. So, and so now for maybe 6 years, she's been the song leader at the Atlanta Women's Weekend. I was wrong. She hasn't thrown it up into my face very many times. But that has turned out to be a way that has opened doors for her to serve. I was just totally wrong. And I've just not forgotten it. She doesn't throw it up to me very often. But think about what you say. We can make or break somebody's heart's desire. We can make their day. We have to be careful about what we say. Let your speech be seasoned with grace. Be always with grace and seasoned with salt. Now, I'm going to talk about something kind of early in this lesson and get it out of the way, because it might be sensitive. I probably should save it for later and see if y'all really like me before I bring this up. But I want to tell you, let me have a little sip before we get there. You're going, what? What is she going to talk about? So another part of being sober-minded is that we need to consider our attire. That is what we wear. And I changed clothes 3 times today, trying to figure out how to look thin, how to look... I started to wear pants. I thought, no, they might not accept me. And then I'm talking about spandex, and this is stretchy. And Carrie Ann still tells me, Mama, you're 5'2". You should wear a pencil skirt. Yeah. Really? I'm not a pencil. I've never been a pencil. But it's kind of always the dilemma, I think. A sober-minded woman, our dilemma is how we present ourselves. I'm not good at fashion. The older I get, the less I care, and the happier I am that I don't care. I don't really care. Nobody's looking at me to say, wow, where'd she get that? Good. The pressure's off me. Not that it was ever on, because I've never been, you know, the fashion person. But let's think about this with our attire. 1 Timothy 2:9. Let's go there. It's, and I'm going to have to get a tissue. I'm a crying speaker. Always. And I don't have one. Okay. Sorry. Okay. 1 Timothy 2:9. Thank you. The people listening will not know what that's about. A Kleenex was thrown my way. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. And then it goes on to say, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. And that's not for today, obviously. I do remember the day, though, in Concord, North Carolina. We were brand new there, and I think I spoke up in a mixed Bible class, and a man held the Bible over it. And I went, oh, really? I mean, I didn't say anything. Okay, and I thought about it. But anyway, here we are today. It's scripture, and I do believe it applies. So I don't want to be too lighthearted about that. It is scripture and it applies. So in like manner, women adorn themselves. So how I kind of liked what Ralph led us into last night. I don't know what he said to the men today, but last night about glorifying God and thinking about how we glorify God even in small ways in our life. And I think as women, we have a huge responsibility to glorify God in the way that we dress. And here's the thing. The men are told not to lust. Godly men are told not only not to commit adultery. Let's back up, Jesus said. You're not going to commit adultery if you haven't even lusted. So let's back up and say, don't even lust. And he did say that. You're not even to look at a woman in such a way that you would lust after her. And so I feel like that gives us a responsibility to help godly men be godly men. And actually, ungodly men, you know, our modesty can also benefit them. Now, I'm just going to tell you, and this might help you relax a little bit, because, you know, I'm married to a preacher, but I haven't always been. Okay, Ralph's my only husband. But I'll just back up. I was born into a godly family when I was 0 years old, and I was not born wearing knee-length shorts. Let's just say that. Okay. So I was born naked, but then later, my family was very dedicated to serving God. And so we did what our parents dictated to us as far as the way we dressed. And I grew up, I mean, I've got a picture of me. I was going to take it to my classroom at I teach fourth grade at FCA, Florida College Academy. And it was me sitting on one of the cannons at St. Augustine, and we were going to go to there for a field trip. But there I was singing in a midriff thing, you know, 8 years old. I don't know. It was really cute. But and we did have some struggles in our home over the length of things because I was born in that time of short skirts and short shorts and all of that. And we did go to the beach. We'll talk about that a little bit. We did go to the beach. So, I am still on a journey, and I'm going to trace it back to my childhood, and I'll tell you another sad story. You're going to need a Kleenex for this, for sure, and I want to be really careful not to imply that my parents weren't godly and, you know, devoted. But the only family at church that didn't go to the beach was the preacher's family. So, okay, that's good for them. Back the towels, we're going. When I went to Florida College camp, this is my Florida College conversion story, I sewed all kinds of things to wear that week because I knew my clothes were not going to work there. I knew that. Because there was something about approaching the knee, 2 inches from the knee, something like that, and I was 13 or 14 years old, I don't know, and we sewed everything. I mean, honestly, I've made a bathing suit before. That's, you know, hilarious, but back when I was a teenager, and that was ingenuity because of no money, so you do that. And I made clothes to wear to camp, I took some white jeans. I took some other, you know, full-length things. And when I got there, my clothes were still too short, what I had sewn. So I'm just kind of giving you a picture of my journey of a pure and holy young girl. Yes. Did my clothes look quite right to you today? No. You'd probably go, whoa, what is she thinking? Well, nothing really. That I had good legs? I don't know. Not thinking like I think now. And there were, of course, discussions in my home about that. But I want to say this about your journey from where you've come to where you're going. I only mention my story because I want us to be compassionate and tender-hearted to people who are not Christians even, or even people in our fellowship who don't share exactly the same view that we have about modesty. Now, I'm not saying that's that you should hold back and not teach them or model modesty for them. I think you should. But it's a journey, and I think it's a learning experience for all of us. I've learned a lot along the way, and I went to Florida College as a student, and I learned a lot about, and I changed. I changed a lot. The first time I went to the beach with a bunch of girls, and I came back, and I still remember Ralph and I were sitting in Sutton Hall. Myra, it wasn't you. And I had a string that was tied up here, and then I had clothes on, of course. And he said, what is that string? And I said, I really think so. And I'd gone to the beach with a bunch of girls that day. We talked about what I had worn, and that was it for that bathing suit. And I truly respected Ralph's point of view. He was not a beach person. He still isn't, because he feels like it's a dangerous place for men to be. That's our family decision. And that's his decision. I still love it. But I love the beach, but clothed in a different way than I used to be. So I want to ask you something about the message that we send. I thought, by the way that we dress, I want us to consider the godly man. Let me mention one thing, and I want to come back to one thing. I want to mention one thing about church. I do remember my father saying this, so it had to have been decades ago, we'll just say that, because I was still living at home, or maybe as a young adult, I don't know. And Daddy said this. He said, it's getting to where a Christian man can't even serve the Lord's Supper without looking away, because all the legs. And this was probably in the 70s when the miniskirt was the issue and women were struggling with to be fashionable, to be godly. It's always our struggle. It's always going to be. And I remember him saying that. And I honestly thought, Daddy, are you kidding? I mean, to me, he was an old man. He didn't think about those kind of things. I was surprised. And young women often don't expect that older men still have within them an attraction to women. But they do. And I've thought about that a lot. And one thing I think is important for us to think about is the Christian men, they need a break every now and then. And of all places, it should be here, where they can go, I'm not going to have to worry about where I look on Sunday morning, because these women are taking care of us. They're clothed in such a way, they're not drawing attention to any particular part of their body. So think about that, and think about giving the men a break. If you've got sexy legs, leave them at home, but not literally. If you want somebody to see your sexy legs, show your husband at home. Be very careful about what we show, even in our fellowship, even in when we get together for social things. Be careful about what we wear. I've pictured this, and I think I was sitting at a pool. I went to, I kept Amanda's children while she's too old to be a camp director, but she, in my opinion, because I kept her children. And we went to the pool one day, and I was really, you know, I think I could have almost worn my bathing suit and my cover-up to this, and you would have been okay with it. But we went, and there was someone from the Bible faculty and his whole family swimming in that pool, and it was a very small pool, and I thought, I am not going to take off my cover-up with a Bible faculty. I did not know the Bible faculty swam here from Florida College. This is not my pool. And Harper had to, of course, say, Nene, are you getting in? not yet. I just felt, I knew that I was modest, but I didn't want to make anyone else feel uncomfortable, and it was a small pool. But I want us to think about this. I was thinking that day maybe even. I don't know if you've ever been caught off guard and thought, wow, I wish I hadn't been wearing that when I went somewhere. And that's kind of our learning process. We learn from that. If you feel uncomfortable and you're kind of ashamed of yourself, you fix it, hopefully, if you have an open heart. But I've pictured this, that there's a rack of clothing out there, and you've got two choices. And there's a label above one that pretty much not is labeled, but by the clothing on that rack, the message is, it's his problem. Lust is his problem. I have a beautiful body, and I'm going to show it. So these are the clothes I'm going to pick. I think there are a lot of racks of clothing out there in the world, and we have to be careful because we really want to come over here to this rack of clothing, and we want to shop and buy the things that send the message, I don't want to be your problem. I don't want to be your problem by the way that I'm dressed. And I want us to think about that. It comes from our heart. I don't want to cause a problem for him. Christian men need their help, need our help. I noticed when we went to see the Ark Encounter this week, I need to bring this up, and I saw, and if you haven't been, you know, it's awesome, but this class is not about the Ark. But I did notice a couple of groups of families there that were dressed very differently. They have not conformed to the world's standards at all. They were all in skirts and dresses, and they looked homemade. I'm going to say they might have been Amish or Mennonite. And I thought, wow, there is absolutely no question at all that they are not conformed to the world, and they are completely modest. And I wanted to go up and compliment them, but then I thought they probably don't receive compliments. Some people are funny about that. But I want to tell you about Tampa, Florida. We have a mosque in the Temple Terrace area. A lot of Middle Eastern people live there. So you can't go to the grocery store anywhere without seeing people from that culture. I've seen it, people living in the Temple Terrace area. And their women have not conformed to our way of dressing. Now, there are a lot of things we could say about their religion and their culture. But I'm telling you, they have not conformed. And they're using their standards of modesty in a culture that I'm sure they look down on not us, hopefully, but on our culture in general of immodesty. But they're not giving in. And I just think if there's one good thing I can get from their religion, it's that. Not to give in to the worldly standards that are ungodly and unhealthy. Now, I know that everybody's going to be self-conscious, especially when I say this next thing. So, it is always a delicate matter when you talk about modesty, because like right now I'm feeling like my clothes aren't probably up to par, and I don't know what I'm going to wear tomorrow now that I've said all this. But I read a great article, and someone else mentioned to me last night they had read it too, and it was about leggings. Now, I know this. The older women are thinking, go, Paula, go. Get the leggings out. But Amanda sold LuLaRoe for a while, and I think it's a great line of clothing. With the intent of their line of clothing is modesty. And they have a religious thrust to that. And they did not intend for people to run around in leggings and, you know, whatever else and show. But we just need to be careful about things like that. David Dieselkamp wrote an article, and I'm happy to, if somebody wants to make copies or just read it, he made such a good point that struck me, and I wanted to share it with you. And he said, modesty isn't just about women covering up their skin. I mean, spandex covers up my skin, but it completely shows my form, good or bad, to whoever is looking at me. And that can be the same thing true of leggings. Now, tomorrow morning, there's going to be a leggings section in church, and we're all going to have on long things over it. And I'm sure that's how most of you approach that. But it's something to think about. Are we just covering skin, Or are we trying to somewhat disguise our form? You know, I don't want to go too far with that because you shouldn't be ashamed of your femininity and your womanly attractiveness. But we need to make sure we present ourselves in a way that's wholesome and helps men be godly as they should be godly. So we got that out of the open. And let's move on. So another trait that's mentioned that let's talk about for just a couple of minutes is a woman of discretion. When it says that a woman should be discreet, what do you think about? I'm fine if you answer out. What does it mean to be discreet? A woman of discretion, somebody who's wise, somebody who's disciplined, somebody has self-control. You know, I think about it being somebody who seems to know what to say or what to do in whatever circumstance they kind of find themselves in. Let me read a couple of things that I wrote down and then we can talk about it. Discretion is somebody who's wise in avoiding errors or in selecting the best means to accomplish a purpose. A discreet person would be judicious, prudent, and careful. Now, the word prudent struck a nerve, and we all know that in Proverbs 19:14, it says a prudent wife is from the Lord. A discreet woman is one who has learned through discipline the fine art of self-control. So we know that as godly women, we need to be discreet women. Think about this. I think I'm going to talk about speech a little bit more. I don't know if it's here or not. But I've heard women say, I just say whatever comes to my mind. Whatever, I'm out with it. And that's somebody who needs to work on not being that way. You know, sometimes, I do accidentally say the wrong thing. And my prayer driving here was that I wouldn't say anything that would be misunderstood or in any way a discouragement to anyone that I'm trying to teach, either here or that might hear it. But that is my desire. And I know you live the same way. But I know I've said things the wrong way before and apologized for them. We all make mistakes that way. But it seems like we, as I said, even in the modesty area, we learn from our mistakes. I mean, we go, that must have been hurtful. I can apologize for it, or is that going to make it bigger? Or I can learn, think before you speak. A prudent woman, a woman of discretion, is somebody that can be trusted. Proverbs 11:22 says, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. And we oftentimes relate that to moral purity, and that certainly is a part of it. Rachel Howard suggested that as we work toward being discreet women, that we think about a couple of things to think about, that we take a genuine interest in other people. Now, that might sound a little bit odd, but I think a woman who is discreet and self-controlled, who is maturing in a godly way, is looking out for other people, and she is useful to other people. And one of the ways that she is useful is because you can trust her. I've heard people say, she's a vault. You can tell her anything, and it stops there. Because a woman, a godly woman, and I don't care how old you are, this is a good virtue, a good characteristic. But a godly woman who may be helping somebody in a time of crisis or helping somebody just in general needs to be able to be trusted with heartfelt issues. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. Because if you're going to reach the younger women, if let's say the oldest woman in this congregation and the youngest woman in this congregation, if they want to reach and have a relationship, there has to be trust. I know this. Ralph doesn't tell me everything, thank goodness, that he knows about people's struggles. I can't bear it. That is just one point in 1,000 reasons why women should not be elders in the church. I mean, God's plan is certainly wise and and I understand it, the older I get, the male leadership is certainly what they're made for. But I know this, it's just better for me to act like I don't know anything, because people do confide, and then I have to think, did they? So I don't tell other people's business to other people. It's not my business to share. Even a comment like, they're having troubles. Pray for them, they're having troubles. And isn't that hard to even refrain from doing? But I think the best thing to do when you're carrying a burden for someone, and I'm thinking especially of older women, for younger women, is to keep it to yourself. They need to know. For example, if somebody confides a terrible struggle within their heart to me, and it's such a burden for me, I've got to go confide in my best friend. And my best friend is overwhelmed with this huge problem that this other person had, and she needs support. It goes to her other best friend, if she has one. See how that can go. We need for the young women to know that we are not going to share their details with others. And I think that's being a woman of discretion. So we take a genuine interest in people. They know they can trust us. We've proven that. Another point to think about that we might cultivate is what I've already mentioned, the art of expressing ourselves properly. And Proverbs 25:11, everybody's seen this cross-stitched or embroidered or whatever. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. A word fitly spoken. And I would love to be that woman that always says the right thing, but I'm not there yet. And I don't know if you are either. But it's something we strive for, to say the uplifting thing. Something for us to think about, and you might be gifted at this, I kind of am, but the Bible speaks against it. One thing that we need to work to eliminate, I've got three things, and one thing is snap judgment. And that is in Proverbs 15:28. I learned a lot in preparing this lesson, but this was kind of for me. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. Now, I don't think that you or I intend to have a mouth of wicked. I don't really mean that we pour forth evil. But the heart of the righteous studies how to answer. When something is needed, when there's a judgment call or intervention with something that somebody needs, stop and think about it. And I will say this is true. I tell people this. If they ask my advice, I'm really good at getting back to you tomorrow. That's the honest truth, because I need time to think it over. I'm probably not good at giving advice like that. But a snap judgment is a little bit different. And a snap judgment is like looking at somebody and making a judgment just on the way they look or a mistake that they've made. But we need to think about eliminating snap judgment. Obviously, we need to eliminate gossip if we're going to be a woman of discretion. And I just gave you kind of an example of how it can go from one person to another, even saying they need prayers. Something's going on there. Be careful about passing things on that way. And of course, a huge thing that a wise woman needs to eliminate is criticism. And we always want to do our best to build up. And you know, I don't know, some people are just naturally born to see what's wrong instead of what's right. It might be me. I don't know. I'm a good proofreader, and sometimes something can be askew, and I go, like in this whole room, there's nothing askew, but I'm like, that clock's crooked. That bothers me. And it's not. But sometimes something stands out that's not quite right. But we need to be careful that when we have that kind of point of view, that it's on inanimate objects and not people. Because we want to think the best of people. So I want to read a poem for you from this book. And it might sound a little bit cheesy. I asked Ralph if it sounded cheesy, and he didn't ever say. What does that say? So it was in a chapter called A Wise Woman, and it says, you tell what you are. You tell on yourself by the friends you seek, by the very manner in which you speak, by the way you employ your leisure time, by the use you make of dollar and dime. You tell what you are by the things you wear, by the spirit in which your burdens you bear, by the kinds of things at which you laugh, by the records you play on the phonograph. No. You tell what you are by the way you walk, by the things of which you delight to talk, by the manner in which you bear defeat, by so simple a thing as how you eat. By the books you choose from the well-filled shelf, in these ways and more you tell on yourself. So there's really no particle of sense in making an effort of false pretense. So a wise woman is not one of false pretense. She is truly and genuinely a godly woman. That's our goal. That's our goal. Now, we're going to talk about being chaste and sexual purity. And I want to say a few things about that. And I don't see, I don't know the makeup of the women here, and I didn't know if there were going to be young girls here or not. But I would like to say some things, and maybe it would encourage you as you're teaching sexual purity to young women who are unmarried. Now, we certainly have a lot to say to women who are married also. The scriptures tell us we should always be on our guard. But there's something that surprises me sometimes with parents. It's what they don't say. It's like afraid to say, not giving explicit directions about certain moral conduct in a young person's life. And I'm going to be honest with you. If my daughters were here, they'd say, well, Mama, you were pretty general in your terms of talking. And I was, but I'm not anymore. I'm sorry. I have granddaughters, and I've seen a lot in my adult life that I had no idea could happen in godly families. And I've said this before, I think I'm a little bit of an enabler, maybe a lot. But when I see something wrong from now on in relationships, or maybe that I suspect is wrong, and I don't mean that I would jump in and speak harshly to anyone, I don't mean that, but I'm not going to stand by and watch. So, I just got to say this, and I might not even get to all of this, and we've got tomorrow, and I was kind of hoping that, but I just got to tell you, Satan is sneaking around behind your back with your children. Don't read my messages. And he's trying to pull them down. And he is pulling them down, and you don't even know it. Now, I am not saying that to make you paranoid. I have a smartphone. Most of you do. But there has to be accountability with smartphones. I know you might not believe this. Ralph and I have, of course, each other's passwords if we can remember it. We're kind of, you know, we're probably okay at this point. To his computer, to my computer, we have complete transparency. I cannot even imagine if Satan, I shouldn't even say this, he'll try, tried to bring down my husband with something like pornography or any other kind of evil that can happen without us knowing it. So your young boys and your young girls, but I want to say especially your young boys, and we raised three daughters, we have three grandsons, and I'm telling you what, we are on it. The whole family, they'll probably run away because we're all going. We've just had a class for not the young boys, but the men in our congregation met in small groups in houses, and they studied a book called Every Man's Battle. And I'll have to say this. Sexual sins are every man's battle. And I can remember this when I was a teenager, and my mother saying this, and she seemed maybe a little bit cynical, or I don't know, I thought that at the time, about dating boys from church. Good boys whose mothers have put the love of God in their heart. You should date those boys. But they're boys. They're not perfect. And don't put your children to the test by putting them in situations that are beyond their control. I'm going to probably skip a whole lot to say this. Recently, somebody mentioned that they invited some kids over to come and babysit their children, and they said, bring your friends, that's okay, and there's food, there's whatever. And that was an invitation to boys, not boys and girls babysitting, but teenage or college age students to be in someone's home tending the children until the children went to bed. And I know you're thinking, Paula, come on, don't you trust anybody? I do, but I don't trust Satan. And that's what you can say when your rules are too harsh for your kids to accept. Because we told our girls when they were growing up, if we suspect that something's amiss or that something's not going right in your life, we will search your room. Now, we didn't have to do that, but I'm saying we were willing to do that, and they knew that, because everybody needs accountability, and we don't need to set our kids up for disaster. So set boundaries. So to the young women, I would say plan ahead as far as how chaste you plan to be when you get married. I'm going to spell it C-H-A-S-T-E. Chaste. Not chaste. By the way, think ahead. Get your game plan. In our house, a boy was never allowed to walk down the hall to a girl's bedroom. I don't care what happened. I don't care what was happening in there. That's old-fashioned. It's a good rule. Somebody actually did that one time. I thought Ralph was going to kill him. It was sort of an accidental thing. The bathroom was down the hall. Anyway, it was no evil intent at all, but that was just some protecting rules that we stated. Never, and we did not allow our daughters, when they were dating, to be alone at home with their boyfriend, unchaperoned. We made them accountable as much as possible. We had a rule of when you get home, you guys have it easier now if you have children dating, you can put a tracker on them. But honestly, and I know you don't want to do that, but make them do that. And I realize I'm sounding extreme, and you feel like, what kind of relationship do you have with your children if you don't trust them? I've got to tell you, Satan is sometimes stronger than we are. And we can't do everything to protect our children, but they're naive, and girls are naive. We're naive girls. I was naive. And when I got married, I thought, whoa, I was living kind of dangerously for a while there because I didn't really know what men were really like. And now I do. I just figured it out what men are really like and the things about men. But let me talk about this. And I know a lot of you have done this to show importance with your daughters as they've grown up. And one thing we did that we had read about and focused on the family, because we raised our kids during that era where James Dobson was, you know, the number one family guru. I still have great respect for him. And that is to give them a covenant ring, to talk about our expectations for their life. And then when they are of an age that they might be thinking about boys, to give them a covenant ring and to talk about a promise that they're going to make to God and to us. And to not take that ring off until their wedding day, with the hopes that that's a reminder of how important purity is to them, was to them when they turned 13, and should be to them until they marry. And so we could probably talk about many ways to teach your children what you expect from them. Ralph had some rules, and when I say parents don't say this or that, Ralph, you know, said this to our girls. This wasn't a rule, but he said, you dress in such a way that you cover what you don't want a boy to be too interested in. And honestly, if you're sitting beside your boyfriend and you have on short shorts, he's going to put his hand on your leg because it's out there. And I'm not sure that's a good place for his hand to be. be careful at how you present yourself and understand that boys are noticing you. And, you know, be kind to them and be modest in your own way. So in order to have sexual purity, we need to encourage our young women and ourselves too, as married women, to cultivate proper thinking. For as a person thinks in his heart, so is he. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Cultivate clean speech. Don't laugh at jokes or things that are suggestive. Be the godly woman in the room, whether you're at work or if you're the teenager, in your class or in your group. Cultivate the desire for good companionship is also good advice. We all know that evil companions corrupt good morals. And I'm a strong believer, and you are too, in letting your light shine wherever you are. But if your light is going dim, or you've had to cover it up to go where you're going or who you're going with, then get out of that situation because it's not right. And I don't know if you've ever found yourself somewhere and you thought, what am I doing here with these people? If you find yourself in that situation and this little thing goes through your head, flee from that place because you don't belong there. If you're thinking it, that's probably right. And I was reminded, thinking about Joseph and his dilemma with Potiphar's wife. I'll say this, don't stand your ground in a bad situation. Get up and go. Flee like Joseph did. Get out of there. You might not be as strong as you think. I pray that you are strong. Now, it's 2:30 and you look tired. I really want to end on a positive note. Because I feel like, I might have stirred up feelings in you that maybe we can't trust our young people. But I have to strongly say, it's not them, it's Satan. And he's more powerful than we think. And we don't even talk this way normally. But I'm talking this way now. Satan will take our young people and we're going to fight him. And we're not going to let him. And in a beautiful and calm and grace-filled way, we're going to teach our young women how to be chaste and how to not disappoint themselves, their God, their family. And we're going to be gentle with them. A lot of times we teach them certainly by our example, and we need to encourage them, but we also need to make sure they know that there is a roaring lion out there. And they need to beware. I realize I'm the older lady now. I mean, you know, grandmother of 9. And I'm sure some of you feel, don't nod, but like she's out of touch. She's going overboard. But that's my job as an older lady, to go overboard. But if I told you things that I have to hold in my heart for the confidentiality of people that I've known through the years, you would agree with what I'm saying. That Satan is powerful, and there is no family exempt from his power. Okay, so we had 2 more things to talk about that are actually good things. Let me say a couple of things really fast, and then let's go. Tomorrow, I do want some interaction from you about spiritual mothering and how we can connect. I've already said that, and that's what I'm looking forward to hearing. There's a lot more wisdom in this room than from me. I know that, and I'd love to hear it, and it's a great chance for the young women to hear from you also. But there's also this part about teach the young women to love their husbands and their children and to be homemakers. And what can I say in 5 minutes? I'm going to say this, that a woman devoted to God is at the basis of the success of the home. Now, if you're feeling overwhelmed at home and you're thinking, why doesn't my husband help me with certain things? Put that out of your mind. We're not talking about him. Ralph talked about him to him. But our job as women is to create a home where godliness is the general rule, that the glory in our home is to God. And it starts with this. I think I just have 3 things to say, or 3 pages. But okay, 3 pages. Our godliness has such an effect on our husband, of course, and our children, and the general environment of our home because of this. If we aren't truly connected to God, then how can we pass on a connection to God to our children? So what I mean by that is we've got to be devoted to God and in His Word and in prayer. And I know you're thinking, well, Paula, we knew that. We could have already gone and taken our nap today. But I want to say this about our lives in America, and that is that we get so busy. And our families, I know how busy you are with your families. I see it with lots of young women. And we may forget about our relationship with God being the most important relationship, because it's what fuels the fire. It's our purpose. It keeps us going. If we lose sight of our relationship from God, we can drift away. If we drift away, so might our children, and hopefully not our husband, but I'm thinking especially of our children. Somehow, some way, our children need to see that God is number one in our life. Somehow, some way. And I'm going to say this. I've got some pictures in my mind. I've got many experiences, and a lot of you do too. And this one always makes me cry. But I have pictures in my mind of my home growing up. And my father sitting at the table with the Bible open. It just seemed like all the time. And if you tried to walk past that table and he's sitting there, he might make you sit down and read out loud. Or say, no. Paula, what do you think about that? Well, he wasn't going to let me say what I thought about that. He was preaching. He wasn't a preacher. But I'm saying he wanted to discuss the Bible. If I had an artist to paint a picture, it would be of Daddy sitting there with an open Bible in a small kitchen. I have pictures, and you do too, of memories of how your parents shared God with you. And I'll say this. I would say on my part as a parent, I think my children have a lot of pictures in their mind of devotional times, of singing, of reading, and all of that. But I'm not sure I was as good at talking daily about God as you all are, the younger generation. I see in the young women just more of a verbal giving credit to God for so many things, and I want to praise you for that because your children need to hear what you're thinking. I'm a little bit of an introvert, and it might not seem that way today, but the truth is I don't really speak that many words. Don't tell Ralph I said that. Oh, but it's true. I'm a little bit on the quiet side, and I think back thinking, man, did I say that to the girls? Did I say things about God enough to them? Hopefully I did. I think they're doing a better job at that than I am. I'll just say that. I'm grateful for that. Let me say this about loving your husband. His love language is respect. You didn't think I was going to say that. It is. In Ephesians 5:22 through 33, we don't have time to talk about marriage. That's for a whole nother time. Your husband must have your respect in order for your relationship to be godly. And if the children are going to respect him, it starts with you. They can sense if you do not respect your husband. And they will pick up on that, and he will lose his place as head of the home based on your reaction to him. But our number one thing in our marriage is in loving our husband is to show respect. So contentment is a vital ingredient. That's another thing. We might just talk about some of these tomorrow. Let me end quickly by saying don't forget to set the table. As a godly mother, I think that one of the most valuable things, I've thought this and we lived it, and I hope you're living it too. But in our home, one of the things I like to recommend that we did is we set the table and we had dinner around the table every night. Now, the every night part, you don't have to do that. But we set the table, and I want to say, I've got a whole talk on that someday, intentionally. And I don't mean just the placemats and the dishes and all of that. But what we did around our table was intentional. We taught our children our values by the discussions we had at the table. And we studied and read the Bible at that table. They learned a lot about life because of our and grew close to each other because we set the table. Even if the food's not homemade, we sat facing each other and we looked in each other's eyes and we talked. And that's just one of the most valuable ways that you can bring your family together and to convey your family values. Now, I know that a lot of people eat in the car because I do. Now, I see young families and there's a time for that. So please don't be sensitive about what I'm saying. I believe that can even happen at a restaurant. The connection of relationships sit, well, I don't know about a restaurant if they can't behave, but it depends on how old your children are. But purposefully making dinner time a time to pass it on. Pass on what's important to you to your children. I just want to recommend that. Okay, I'm going to close with a prayer. And tomorrow, I hope you'll all be back. I know somebody has to teach classes tomorrow, and we'll talk a little bit more about our role as godly women together through the generations. I'm going to turn this off.